Hey guys, and welcome back to another episode of the Diamond Discussion Podcast alongside my co-host Joe Stumpo. I'm Mike Caliendo. So guys, we definitely got some feedback on the trivia from the last episode that we left you off with. But we asked you for something specific and we needed the comments to be on the podcast, and you guys are still, you're not doing that just yet. So we have an idea what we want to do, but we need you guys to respond this way. All right. So again, I don't want to give out too much because I want to see you guys rise to the occasion like you have, because we've gotten multiple answers this week and multiple right answers, which I'm very happy about. But until we get the comments and the responses on the podcast itself, then we will maybe leak out a little more information of what we're trying to do with this trivia stuff. So without further ado, Joe, let us know how it went and remind our folks what the question was.
What's going on, everybody? So the question, if you listened to last week's episode, was, you know, a tribute to Jackie Robinson. We tried to give you a little bit of a history lesson in regards to Jackie. So we tried to base the question around, obviously, Jackie. So the question for last week was, when did the number 42 get approved to be worn league-wide by all the teams? And the answer was the year 2009. That's when 42 was approved by the league for players to wear it on their back of their jerseys. And that's for everybody. So 2009 was the answer. It's been going on since then. And like I said, we tried to make this a Jackie-related type of week. Trying to commemorate him and all the good that he brought to the game. So like you said earlier, we had a bunch of people get it right. So that was pretty cool that they kind of knew that. So that was refreshing to see. But yes, we have a little bit of an idea of what we want to do. But you guys got to leave the answers to the future questions that we give in the podcast itself, in Spotify. And then maybe you'll see what we have in store. So try to get those answers in the podcast itself, in the comment section, and you'll see what's in store for yourselves.
Yeah, guys, we need this. Trust me, you're going to like it. At least I think you are. Listen, it's going to be fun. It's going to be worth it. We're trying to spice things up, mix it up a little bit. So until we get that, then we're not. I'm going to be a steel trap. I'm just going to keep hinting and teasing you guys with this until we get what we need from you. So, you know, guys, we're going to need you to step up to the occasion. Like, it's the bottom of the ninth and there's a man on and you're down a run and you got to hit a home run to win the game. So let's win one, right? Listen, we've had a very impactful weekend that just passed. To everybody out there, obviously, Easter Sunday took over for some of you. So happy Easter to everybody. Belated Easter, I guess. But both of our teams had some interesting things go on throughout the weekend. So, Joe, I'm going to let you lead off. You're going to tell us about your Yankees and some of the fun stuff that went on with you guys over the weekend in that minor league stadium.
So, the one positive is that the Yankees took 3 out of 4. They should have swept the series. Saturday was a tough loss. We were up 8-4 going into the ninth. And I guess you want to call it a meltdown from Devin Williams. I was actually kind of defending him a little bit. Yes, he didn't look great, but there was a lot of things that I can't hold against him. First and foremost, a throwing error by Oswaldo Cabrera with one out. That would have been the second out of the inning. He was rolling. That kind of killed the momentum a little bit. Then he gives up an infield single. He gives up a hard hit double by Chandler Simpson, who we're going to talk about in a little bit as well. He was involved in some other controversy, but Chandler Simpson, top prospect, gets a decent double down, you know, the left field line. I'm not going to fault him on that. That was a hard hit. That was a true hit. Yeah. But then he gives up a bloop single, which, you know, it's a bloop single. It's not a hard hit ball, right? And it just was able to dunk in. And then the rest is history. The Yanks lose in the bottom of the 10th. They give up 4 runs in the ninth. They tie it, and then they go to the 10th, and they can't get it done, and they lose the game on a two-run homer. But the good thing was the starting pitching. Rodon, he started off the series. He did phenomenal. 6 innings, no runs, 9 Ks. He scattered 4 walks. He looked great. His stuff was there. He was consistent the whole game. His fastball was great. His slider was great. Struggled with the changeup a little bit towards the end of the start. But honestly, he was mixing all of his pitches pretty well. So I'm pretty happy with his start there. Not for nothing, Carlos Carrasco on Saturday, he kept us in that game, to be honest with you, the entire game. We had a decent lead. He gave up four runs through five, but I was happy with that. It's the best you're going to get from him, honestly. He basically, it was a gritty start throughout the whole game, and then he got to the 50, you know, gave up some runs there towards the end, but he did very well. And then, obviously, you can't say anything less about Max Fried. 7 2/3, almost had a no-hitter. He had 2 Ks, 2 walks, 2 hits, no runs. He's 4-0 with a 1.42 ERA right now. He's got to be the top pitcher in the AL, or at least one of them, through his first 5 starts. But the more interesting thing that happened yesterday was he was literally chasing a no-hitter. There was a controversial play in the 6th with Chandler Simpson, who was a top prospect. Like I said, he doubled off of Williams in that Saturday game. Mm-hmm. But he hits a ground to Paul Goldschmidt, and Goldschmidt moves to his right, bobbles the ball off his chest, clear error. It's ruled an error. We get to the top of the 8th now. Basically, 3 whole innings later, they played the whole 6th, the whole 7th. The Yankees are batting in the 8th, and the scorekeeper, Bill Matthews, who's the head scorekeeper for this 4-game set, decides to change it to a hit. Now, am I mad that it was changed to a hit? Yes, because it's a clear error. Was I mad that it was changed 3 innings later? Yes. This needs to be addressed. We can't have guys who are potentially pitching a no-hitter, and this has nothing to do with me being a Yankee fan. This goes for any other team that this happens to. You can't have a guy who's pitching his ass off, literally, and gets to the 8th inning, thinks he's got a no-hitter going, and it's taken away from him.
Yeah, so I'm going to side with you on this. That was ridiculous to me. That was a clear-cut error. That was not a hit. That was not. I mean, the only other thing that I could see and the only defense to that is that kid could fly. So with the way that Goldschmidt was tailing away from the base, it would have been a tough and probably a close play. But to determine that being a hit when, listen, nine times out of ten – this guy's probably out in that situation.
And he didn't make the play, so you can't say, oh, if you would have made it, does he beat it out because he's got speed? Who knows? If he makes the throw and Fried is covering the big, maybe he's out. You can't make that assumption. Yeah. Now, if you could make the play, like you said, and the kid's got speed and he beats it out, then it's a true hit. And I have no problem with that. But you let 2.5 innings go by to the point where the whole – audience watching the game at the stadium on TV thinks that Fried still has this no-hitter intact, and it gets taken away from him in such a way that it's kind of like it's Bush League. I mean, if you're Bill Matthews, I understand he's a veteran scorekeeper. That's great. I understand. But to make your imprint on the game that way was kind of ridiculous to me. You got to know what's at hand here. You got to know what's at stake. The guy's pitching a gem. And like I said, it's a potential no-hitter, and you take it away from him that way. I mean, that's not the way you do it. That's not the way it should have been done. Shame on him, honestly, for that. That's crazy. And this whole week with a lot of bad calls, a lot of questionable calls. But you just got to move on. I mean, to segue into that, Aaron Judge hits a home run. I went 42,000 feet. I'm not even exaggerating. This ball was absolutely – it was obliterated. I mean, obliterated. And the ball literally, I mean, it was so fair that it landed in a certain area of the stadium that it's only in fair territory. So the fact that these umps actually went to replay, right? They said, okay, we'll call it fair or foul, whatever they called it. Let's go check, take a look. And that they don't see that it's fair is even scarier. Like, I understand at the heat of the moment, you may not see it, right? The heat of the moment, the play happens so fast, the ball's traveling so fast, you make a quick call, you don't know. But then you go to replay to help you out. It's an aid, literally to help you not screw up calls, and you blew it a second time. I mean, Aaron Judge is the most vanilla-answering athlete in the history of New York sports. I mean, he may even rival Derek Jeter, honestly, when it comes to answering the media. He got asked the question about that home run, and he said it was literally a home run. Now, Judge would usually say, oh, you know, it's a missed call. We're going to move on. He wound up saying that towards the end of the interview, but he was like, that was really bad. He's like, that was a home run. There's no other way around it. I don't know what else more you have to look at. They went to replay and still got it wrong after going to replay. So even he's questioning, what's the point of replay if you're just going to keep getting the call wrong? The replay is supposed to be an aid to help you get it right. And you're literally, and I was telling you know, a buddy of mine earlier today, these calls, even though they're not ball and strike related, the ABS system is just going to keep, it's going to roll out even more now. to eliminate mistakes, these umpires are literally going to see robots taking over their job. So the more calls you see missed, the more of an automated system you're going to see in the future. And that may lead into more than balls and strikes. Maybe they start calling close plays at the plate, close plays on the base paths. You keep messing up, that's what's going to happen. So, like I said, it didn't affect the Yankees winning the game yesterday, but you brought up a very good point. What happens if that was Aaron Judge's 399th home run and he was chasing 400 and he gets robbed? Yeah. Obviously, it's early in the season. It wasn't like it was the last game of the season. He'll obviously reach some of those feats. But you made a good point. If that was 399 and that was his last at bat and it's the last game of the season, he essentially got robbed twice.
I got one better for you. Let's talk a little down the line. It's come September. Let's say Judge, the way he's lighting the ball on fire right now, let's say this continues like we all anticipate, because it's Aaron Judge. He does this on a regular basis. And let's say he's fighting for history again. What if he goes to break his own record, the AL home run record, and he comes up one home run shy? Or, he ties the record and doesn't get another one, and that was the deciding factor. It's things like that. I don't like the how this maybe could affect history. I mean, time is going to tell. But I agree with you. Listen, most of the time, though, they get this stuff. They get it right. Sometimes it's there's not enough to overturn. In that situation, I don't know how there was not enough to overturn it. It was clear.
It was so fair that it was unfair. Like, that's how, I don't know how else more you have to hit a ball into fair territory. Like, I know the poles, the foul poles, they're not the same length in Major League stadiums. It doesn't matter. This ball was hit so far to the right of the pole. I mean, how do you mess that up? And then you go to replay to get it right, and you still are wrong. I don't understand. But that's what we're dealing with right now. That's just how you got to, suck it up, and you got to just keep it moving.
You guys definitely had a few discrepancies go on in that series. Obviously, the Max Fried thing, you're almost thankful that after that error was changed to a hit, that a guy got a hit after that, because then you'd really be flipping out. And I would be too. I don't like that, obviously, we know the most famous imperfect game with Galarraga in Detroit.
Oh, my God. Jim Joyce. What a terrible call.
That's why I always joke around and say that the Johan Santana home run with the Mets and home run no hitter with the Mets was justice for that. Because, if replay would have existed, maybe that no hitter doesn't exist, because
that's a good point. Yeah.
That Beltran ball down that line, I don't know. I might have seen some chalk come up, but. And that's a Mets fan saying it, but my justification to it is, listen, it makes up for Galarraga. The Mets got their first no-hitter in history. I don't care about what could have been, what might have been. It is what it is. It worked out in my favor, so I'm happy. I don't mean to sound biased or impartial about it, but what are you going to do? That's exactly. With the free thing, like I said, you are almost thankful that somebody ended up getting a hit and kind of ruining that, so we didn't have this problem. And hopefully, Judge isn't chasing history again, which he seems to always be doing. What does this mean, later on down the road, come September, towards the end of the season, what he's chasing, what he's doing, obviously barring no injuries, and where he's going to end up with his home run totals. I mean, he could be the home run king again this year. And no, because now he's tied with whoever, and that one home run made the difference.
Right.
Listen, it didn't impact the result of the game, so I understand Judge's frustration, like all of us that saw it. It hurt me too, because I have him on one of my fantasy teams and I could use the extra points in that particular matchup. So, it hurt me as well. I was annoyed. Not why I'm agreeing with you. What's right is right, and what's wrong is wrong. It is what it is. But
got to get that right. You can't go to replay and still get that wrong. The whole point of having the replay is to get it right, and you're getting it wrong. I mean, yeah, and there's there's people at home, there's people at the ballpark that all see that this ball is fair, and you went to replay, and everyone's probably like, oh, they'll get it right. This is clear as day, and they come back, and they screw it up twice. I mean, at this point, you're running yourself out of a job. These umpires are literally running themselves out of jobs.
The field, they're not the ones watching the replay, though, so it's not, you know, the replay isn't on them. It's the guys in New York in that little chamber with all the TVs, so.
That's true, but, you know, it's just
frustrating.
I don't know how they got that one wrong. Just at the end of the day, they got that one wrong, and it was a brutal call.
Yeah. And listen, outside to a few other things that you mentioned, obviously with the Yankees over the weekend. Listen, the pitching looked good, like you said, outside of Carrasco. He kept you in the game. I mean, he gave up four over what, six innings? Or no, he
didn't. I believe it was five.
Five. You know, the pitching has looked.
It was actually four innings. He pitched four innings.
Okay. All right. Listen, but that's how the game played out. He kept you guys in. It seems your rotation, for the most part, Rodon had a stellar start. You know, you needed that. You needed that bounce back from him, and you got it. I think it was solid. You know, this is the Rodon that the Yankee fans want to see. You know, this is the guy that, you know, no meltdowns, no blips, no, you know, a couple little bad calls or whatever, and the guy loses his head a little bit. You know, I mentioned this in the past that, you know, this is a chess game, not only with you and the hitter, but it's also sort of a mental chess game with you and the umpires, because they're going to miss calls and it's going to happen. It's just, you know, it's the human element. Now, I'll be honest with you. I sort of love this ABS system that is probably going to be, you know, in 2026, maybe. I don't know. I see it happening in 26. You know what? My thing with it is, and I understand this is a skill, and I do respect it, and I get that, you know, catchers, they steal strikes here and there. That's all fine and good. But this pitch framing stuff has really gotten on my last nerve. It really has.
And I understand your frustration, and I think umpires, they're not distinguishing that anymore. They used to be able to understand when a pitcher was, when a catcher was framing. And I don't think that they're seeing that anymore. I think the calls lately have been atrocious when it comes to balls and strikes. And this year, more than most, umpires are literally missing balls 4 to 5 inches off the plate. I mean, that's pretty substantiating evidence there. I mean, we're watching games and they have the pitch tracker on, and you can see where the balls, you know, are located, and the dot is like 4 or 5 inches off the plate.
Yeah,
and they're getting a strike call, or there's a pitch that's literally down the middle, and the umps aren't—they don't call it a strike. They're running themselves out of jobs. Literally, this ABS system, like you said, get rolled out next year. I think they have no choice.
It's coming.
It's going to be coming. I think it's going to be sooner rather than later. Like you said, probably within the next year. I think it was a good success in the minors and in spring training. And I think it's going to happen. I really do. These umps can't decide the fate of games due to a missed call. And like we just said, if they miss a call and they go to replay and they miss it again, now you got the umps looking ridiculous. You got the guys in New York, like you were just saying, that are reviewing the tape, they look ridiculous. So it's like, what are we doing here?
Yeah, it's absolutely frustrating. And it's, and you know, like I said, the whole catcher stealing the strike, the, you know, the pitch framing thing. My biggest thing with an umpire is if you're going to call a pitch a certain way, stay consistent. Don't move the box and don't move it around. If you're calling that outside strike, or, you know, however it is, then call that outside strike all day. Don't pick and choose when you want to call it. Don't, this guy gets it, but this guy doesn't. This guy framed it better, but this guy didn't as much, so I'm not really going to give it. Like, no, enough with that. Just be consistent. That's at least fine. You could work with that. So at least you know, like, all right, that outside pitch or that inside pitch he's calling, it's frustrating and it changes your dynamic because of how you know the strike zone. But at least it's some sense of consistency. I still, listen, you could be better, but at least just be consistent. That's the most aggravating thing. Like, don't, you're not going to call the low strike all game and then halfway through mix it up and now you're not giving that call anymore. That's not how this works. We're not doing that.
And right. The other thing, And you gotta make the adjustment too. These plays, they try to make the adjustment, but they can't because the umpire is too inconsistent.
Yeah.
So for example, if they're calling a low strike, call that low strike and the hitters will adjust. But then all of a sudden that low strike goes away and now you're calling a higher strike. So it's like, wait, the first three innings you were calling that low strike, now you're not calling it anymore.
Yeah.
That's my problem, is that they're not consistent, like you just said. If you're gonna call a low strike, a high strike, fine, do that. Go ahead. I have no problem with that.
The aggravating thing is too, you force your hitters to, you know, swing at bad pitches or swing at non-strikes, and you know, now it messes up your psyche. It messes up the mental a little bit, you know, in the box. That's for sure. So, you know, at least just have the consistency there. At least that is.
Yeah, and it happened to the judge tonight. It happened to the judge tonight against Cleveland. He was up with a runner on second, and the first pitch of the at bat, it was a bad call in my opinion. It was a high strike, and it wasn't in the zone, and it really just ruined the entire at bat. And he wound up swinging and missing at a strike three. That it looked like a good pitch, but his swing was not good because I just think he was overmatched and he was kind of guessing. But it's because the umpire makes a bad strike one call, and now you're behind the eight ball.
Yeah.
So, I get it. They're professionals. They have to adjust. They got to grind through it. But when your back is getting put against the wall because of somebody else, it's a tough pill to swallow there.
Yeah,
but like you said, consistency is key. If you're not going to be consistent, that's going to be tough because these hitters that are adjusting 4 to 5 different times throughout the game to get everything down pat because the umpire is all over the place. That's where it's hard for me.
And listen, the ABS system, when it does come into effect, because it's coming. It's not if, it's when. You know, I think it'll make umpires better. You know, the other thing to that, it doesn't speed up the game really at all. I mean, you guys were watching spring training. You saw it. What took 5 seconds to get that call right? I think we could spare, you know, all right, let's say there's 10, 12, 15 of those a game. You're talking a couple of minutes extra. All right, fine. As long as the calls are right, I don't think anybody cares. As far as like the robotic umpire thing, like going that far, I'm not crazy about it because I still like the human element. Obviously, the ABS will change that, you know, because it's like that's the way it's been for 100 years. You know, it's the human element of the game.
It's getting brutal. Yeah, it's getting bad.
You know what, these guys, you know what? Look, these pitchers, they throw crazy stuff that has crazy movement. And
I agree.
It's their job, though, so they should master their craft. I'm not trying to really give them too much an excuse, but also in the same respect, if this was us, if you put us behind the plate right now, how many of these calls are we getting right? Probably.
Oh, no.
We're probably worse than Angel Hernandez, and that's saying something.
And just like the hitter, you have a split second to realize if it's a fastball, a curveball, a changeup, a slider. Umpires have a split second too.
Yeah, and then on top of
that, I get that.
You're dealing
with
these catchers with the pitch framing. So maybe in your head, and you have to make that call instantaneously. So maybe in your head, you're like, oh, that was borderline. And then you're looking at the way the catcher's glove is looking, and it's like, oh, I have to call that a strike. But this is why the whole pitch framing thing, listen, I respect the craft. I respect the skill of it. It's just so annoying now. It really is. It's just so annoying. And I can't wait for the ABS to come into effect to eliminate that part of, I guess, being a catcher, because it is a little ridiculous. But
yeah,
listen, it is a skill, and there are some catchers out there that are a lot better at than others. But, you know, it is what it is. Listen, guys in the comment section, I bother you 3, 4, 5 times a show with this. We want to hear your feedback on the Yankees weekend, the judge missing the home run, the Max Fried no-hitter that got taken away. Again, we saw how that came about. The whole series in itself, Devin Williams and I guess his meltdown, but not really a meltdown, to get into that for a second, those bloopers are so annoying because it's like you have the guy beat and it's just
an infield single by Yandy Diaz, who has no speed. It was just
That's frustrating.
It was a perfect dribbler. He had enough time to beat it out. And Cabrera, who also made another throwing error today, I don't know what's going on. He's got to fix whatever is going on at third base. He's got to fix the throwing because he air-mailed another one over Goldschmidt's head.
Yeah,
and he's got to figure that out. Because we can't keep having ground balls that are fielded and then you airmail the throw. It's we can't have that. So
you don't give teams extra outs.
Because we're getting we're getting the out. That's the thing. The pitcher is doing his job. He's getting the ground ball, and now you're airmailing the throw. I'd rather you miss the whole play completely.
Right.
You know, like just don't field the ball at all. But you know,
I get he's got
to fix that up.
Yeah, but he's got to work on it. Which is that could be reversible, obviously. But again, guys, in the comment section on the corresponding posts on Instagram and Twitter, Diamond Discussions 25, reach out to us there if you want. If that's better for you, whatever it is, we prefer the comments here. But listen, we're all ears either way. We love the feedback. We're gonna move on to the Mets now. Interestingly enough, they swept the Cardinals in a four-game series over the weekend. That was the first time they've done that since '86.
So yes, I heard that today. Yeah, 40 years almost. Yeah.
Yeah, that is nice. I like that. I like being connected to '86 in any which way, shape, or form. I will take that every day of the week. Listen, the Mets are hot right now. They look great. The pitching has been beyond my expectation, because you and I have debated this multiple times, me being so optimistic about the pitching staff and how they're going to look and the Jeremy Hefner effect and everything that I've said, they've so far exceeded my expectations. I did not expect this rotation to look this way. I couldn't even tell you. I understand that Senga is obviously considered the ace, but he didn't start the season that way. And whatever the case is, listen, I guess he's the leader of the staff. At least in my opinion, I think everybody would tend to agree with that statement. And he's pitching like that. This guy is got a 0.79 ERA so far in four starts. Honestly, incredible. I'm loving what I'm seeing from him. That ghost pitch is exactly what it sounds like, because that's the hitters can't do anything with it.
It's devastating. It really is. I was watching it. It's crazy.
That pitch is disgusting. He just makes me – I love seeing it. He makes me like him so much more every time he gets on the mound. This guy's a gamer, and he's always just cool, calm, and collected. You don't see a crazy amount of emotion from him. He's just locked in the zone, and this is even his losses too. You don't really see him labor. You don't really see it on his face all that much. He seems to just be locked into the moment at all times, and that's what you want to see. That's the type of leader you want to see of the staff. You know, not to mention the fact where I think we're getting closer to getting Manaea back. I know we got about this area now, and then we got the setback, so hopefully that's not the case. Overall, the hitting is starting to come around. Pete Alonso is still lighting the world on fire. He had a home run over the weekend, drove in a bunch more RBIs, and Lindor is starting to heat up big time.
Yes, that's the key.
Coming into tonight actually, he, for the second consecutive day, has led off the game with a home run. He destroyed my no-run first inning parlay that I had going, but take that. It's fine. It's a couple bucks. It's not a big deal. As long as the Mets win, it is what it is. I'm happy.
We gotta talk about Tyler McGill, too, really quick.
Dude, he looks great.
3-2 with a 1.09? Who is this guy?
Right. He looks incredible. He's pitching a lot better than his brother, I'll tell you that.
Oh, that's for sure. I mean, but he in that rotation, he was probably one of the bigger question marks, and it's not a question mark anymore.
At least for right now.
For right now, it's working out very nicely.
Peterson is another one. He had a solid start. You know what it is with Peterson, and this is where he could really truly shine. I feel like he has those starts where he either gives up a ton of hits or a bunch of walks. So his last start, he didn't have any walks, but he gave up a ton of hits. When he finds that middle ground and maybe could balance that out a little bit, I think, he's going to – and he's already been phenomenal, but he'll be almost damn near untouchable if he could find that. He's looked very good. And a guy you're pretty familiar with, Clay Holmes, has – I don't want to say surprised me, because spring training was surprising. And I get it, it's spring training. But the way he looked in spring was one thing. And then came out, opened up against Houston, a little shaky, but bend but didn't break, kept you in the game.
His first three starts were a little shaky, but his last one was really good.
But they've been everything has been an improvement going forward. He's improved. He's gone lengthier into games. What was it? Against Miami, struck out 10. Like, you know, listen, when everything clicks for him, I think he's going to be fantastic. He's going to really fill out this rotation. Like I said, we're getting Manaea back very soon. hopefully. The Montas effect is going to be fun because you know what? If all of these guys are pitching the way they do, you bring Manaea into the mix, he's an obvious one. Montas, on the other hand, obviously he would be an obvious to bring into the rotation. But at this point, when you got all these guys pitching the way they are, what do you do? Like, what's the move at this point? Because everybody is pitching well. Is it just we have to hope for a bad start so we have a decision to make so it's easy, you know?
I honestly think, like I said, this was the same thing when I was talking about Ben Rice, what happens when Giancarlo Stanton comes back, what happens with Rice. If he's got the hot hand still when Stanton comes back, you play the hot hand.
Yeah,
that's just how it
– Stanton.
No, I'm not saying you're going to sit him, but you got to play Rice. You find a way to continue to play Rice.
Yeah,
and you find a way to continue to pitch Tylo Megill. You find a way. That's it.
Yeah, I mean,
you find a way to keep Peterson out there. And listen, if Montas has to come out of the pen, so be it. Prove yourself.
And you know what's another thing that's crazy about this bullpen and the pitching staff in general? I'm going into the bullpen now. I jumped the gun, but it seems right now the weakest link in this bullpen has been Edwin Diaz.
Tonight he'd struggle to again against Stott. He gave that 3-run homer, but
yeah, and Stott has done nothing.
It seems to be the Yankees and Mets bullpen is phenomenal, doing very well. Mark Latta Jr.'s been good. Ian Hamilton's been very good. Fernando Cruz has been good. You just mentioned a bunch of guys in your pen, and then it comes out closes, and it seems to be that they have an issue.
Yeah, I don't understand what's going on.
Devin Williams looks like he's throwing the changeup too much.
He came out and said that.
He said, and I agree with it. He's throwing the changeup way too much.
And you know what? This is another thing that gets on my nerves because I saw that, and then I also saw a video where someone tried to say that Devin Williams just called out the Yankees. I'm sorry, what?
No, yeah, stop what it. Is that about?
Stop
he,
it.
He's saying himself. He's saying himself that he threw out his changeup is being used too much. Now, was it an indirect shot at Matt Blake for saying, "Hey, we want you to go change up heavy"? I don't know. Who knows? But guess what? You make adjustments. That's what you have to do. Make an adjustment. Throw your fastball. You throw it 95 miles an hour. Throw it. That'll set up your changeup. Your changeup becomes more devastating when you throw the fastball.
There's that too, but you know what? I think his changeup is just being left too much in the zone. It's catching too much plate.
Yes. You know,
I think that's the problem. I don't think that he's throwing it all that much. I think he's throwing it all that much in the zone, and I think that's the problem. You need that pitch to drop out of the strike zone, not stay in it. So I think that would be maybe part of the problem. But I mean, hey, listen, I'm no expert. I just talk about baseball on a podcast. Like, you know.
But yeah, so basically it's Williams is throwing his changeup too many times, and it's not airbending, quote-unquote, as we like to call it. Yeah. But – I think for more for Diaz, it's he's just grooving fastballs in hitters counts. That's what I see.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. That's the problem. He's been coming into the games a little erratic, and
it's that get me over strike that he's trying to throw, and he gives up a big hit. Guys
are taking advantage of it. And listen, but again, Ben did not break. He gave up that home run. They came within a run, and then he finished off the job, and he ended the game striking out Harper on three pitches. So
and it made him look completely silly.
Yeah. So, I listen, as long as it didn't cost the game, I know it's frustrating because I think his ERA is probably through the roof at this point. But he's still getting the job done in a scary way. Outside of that, obviously the one guy I didn't bring up and I decided to save him for the end because there was also a little controversy, Mr. Soto. You know, there was a lot of stuff leading into the weekend, said by some of the media, a guy that we love to quote because he just seems to want to give us more content and stuff to talk about. But, you know, not that I want to say that it was him that pushed this, but our buddy over there at WFAN, Sal Licata, pretty much said that if it was him and screaming into the microphone as he normally does, that, you know, Mets fans should be booing Soto, like things along those lines. All right. I never understood that, you know, maybe as a kid, like a guy doesn't play well, you know, like when I was a kid, I'd boo. And then, you know, playing team sports and growing up and all that other stuff, it was kind of like, now, look, I'm not a member of the Mets team. I am not the 26th man on the roster. You know, none of that. But my mentality goes into a game where, and listen, people are going to disagree with me wholeheartedly, and I understand it's New York too, but I never understood if a player that you're rooting for a team that you're rooting for is struggling, you go out and boo him. Because reality of it is, when you play a team sport, it doesn't matter what it is, do you boo your teammate when they play bad or when they're struggling or whatever the case is? No, you try to do the opposite. And the Mets fans seem to have responded. Thank God that we don't have Mets fans that listen to Sal Licata and look at him as the, you know, holy grail of baseball talk, because maybe that's what would have happened. But the Mets fans decided to turn it around and actually give Soto an ovation, which then Soto responded and drove in a run on that, you know, on that same at bat. So listen, this is a new, I guess, mentality that's been changing the way. I don't like giving Philly fans credit, but I have to. I feel like they might have started this with Trey Turner a few years ago.
I agree.
Struggling huge, and Philly fans rallied together and said, listen, we're going to give this guy an ovation. We're going to try to motivate him and get him going. So, listen, this is the one rare time you'll hear me compliment Philly fans, but, you know, I think they might have started this. I love it because, like I said, when you're in the dugout, and again, it doesn't matter what team sport it is, you're on the sidelines, you know, football, hockey, whatever. If your guy is struggling, a guy you go to war with every day, you know, a guy that you're training with nonstop and he's struggling, what are you doing? Are you booing him? Are you telling him
right.
He's terrible? Like, what are you doing all that? No. So, and I get it, we're not on the team, but we're a part of it in a sense because we go to the games, we spend the money, we do all this, and people have the right to be frustrated when a guy, especially a guy like Soto, is getting paid all this money and he's underperforming. Listen, you know what? I'll look at it this way. The Mets are winning. At the end of the day, that is the most important thing. Doesn't matter how you get there, if it's ugly or pretty, a win is a win, and that's it.
Alonzo is hitting
like, you know, I don't even know who, I don't know who this guy is right now, and I'm loving it. I love this new identity of Pete. I will break that down in a little, but just to finish off on the Soto thing, I mean, he responded to it. He spoke about it afterwards. He loved what he saw from the crowd. You know, and listen, Citi Field has been packed on top of it. So look, if this is the guy that is underperforming right now, but the Mets are still winning, what's going to happen when he's lighting the world on fire? You know, what's going to happen? Like right now, Alonso seems to be cooling down just a little. Lindor is picking up that fire. So it's going to bounce all over the place. That's what I'm seeing. It's not the same guy every night, and they have firepower to not be the same guy every night. So if this is what this team is capable of when Soto is quote unquote struggling, could you imagine when this guy is hot and what this team is going to do?
No, that's the whole thing. You got, when that happens, it's going to be a monster.
Yeah.
It's going to be, and that monster is going to come to a head and explode. So that's the key, is that Alonso's been hitting for average, which is something that he's not used to doing. And Soto is struggling, which he's not used to doing. But he's still getting on base 2 to 3 times, which is causing Pete to drive in those runs, which is, I think, people are forgetting.
Yeah.
So if Soto doesn't get on base, they're not going to pitch to Pete the same way. They could pitch around Pete, but they got to try to get Pete out now because they got all these guys on base.
And so, you know what the thing with Pete is, too? He's laying off those pitches.
The slider outside, yeah.
Even just balls out of the zone, he's laying off them. And even the time I'm sorry, but no guy is going to look pretty in every at bat. He's going to swing at a bad pitch. It happens. So I'm not going to crucify a guy when he swings at a bad curveball in the dirt.
Absolutely.
It
is what it is. Absolutely.
You know, it's part of the game. It is what it is. So I don't get mad at that. But overall, the body of work of what I've seen so far, he's laying off of those bad pitches that he normally strikes out on or whatever the case is. And even the tougher pitches that are maybe in the zone or just on the corner, just there, he's fighting them off. So this is not the same Pete that I remember. It's just not. I have not seen this version of Pete Alonso before. I didn't know this version of Pete Alonso existed. This is a scary monster. I'm sorry.
Well, here's the thing. He's getting the early fastball and he's mashing it. That's the key. He's getting into fastball counts. He's taking advantage of that. Now, do you want to say, oh, that's because of Soto? Yeah, sure. Why would we take that away from him? Pete would have not seen this type of pitching if Soto wasn't hitting in front of him. Like you said, you've watched every single game. You know what you're talking about. I'm on outside of looking in. When I watch the game, I see certain things. They're pitching around Soto. They'd rather walk Soto, and they'd rather deal with Pete for whatever reason. It's not working. They're cutting off their nose despite their face a little bit with that type of strategy, and it's just not working right now. Is it something that's going to happen all year? I don't know. But if you keep going down that trajectory and down that road, it's going to be tough to get this guy out if you're going to put two guys on base, or even if Soto just gets on base, because now you got to worry about dealing with Pete. So this is a good problem to have.
It is. It really is. I'm happy with what I'm seeing so far. Like I said, the Mets are winning games, and that's what the end all be all is to me. I don't care how they do it. I don't care how ugly it looks. I don't care how pretty it looks. At the end of the day, it's a W in the column, and that's all it is. It doesn't matter how dirty or how gross or however they got to it is. But I will end this. And Joe, I'm sorry to do this because you've had your fun with it a little bit because you know it gets on my nerves. But this is more, I'm going to finally not be so nice. And this is not directed towards you. I know you might get a little mad at me when I say this, but it's fine. I'll deal with it. To the Yankee fans that are, you know, putting Soto under a microscope and constantly watching everything that is happening in Queens and every time something goes wrong or every little thing, that they could laugh at or whatever the case is, that's all fine and good. So I'm going to take my shot back. Clay Holmes, the guy that you all laughed at that we signed as a starting pitcher, has a better ERA than 4 out of 5 of your starters. Just throwing that out there. Joe, I'm sorry. I hate to do that to you. I love you, brother, but it's on my nerves now. You know, it really is. And I've dealt with it all offseason with the laughing and this and that. And you know what? When I turn around and say that it's too early to judge Soto, you know, that's a problem. And it's whatever. So you know what? I'm going to take the same page out of everybody else's book, and I'm going to get petty here. I'm going to say, all right, fine. If that's the level that we're on, Clay Holmes is better than 4 out of 5 of their starting rotation. So there, I said it. Be mad at me. I don't care.
It's perfectly fine. My team's in first place. That's okay.
Right, exactly. And you don't care because we're winning. It's the same thing with me.
It's the same thing. Right? I don't care.
It works.
Go ahead.
I'm glad that maybe some of the Yankee fans listening that maybe have that mentality and have ragged on Soto and laughed at us for Clay Holmes. I hope you're punching air right now because of what I just said. I hope it upset you.
No, it's perfectly fine. I'm a realist. It's fine. I see the numbers. It's perfectly fine. But I also will call out some of the Met fans that I saw videos making saying that they would be gladly willing to give us Soto back.
Those guys are ridiculous. We don't claim
as that. Much as you have the fans that know what they're talking about, you also have fans that look like they need to maybe sit in the corner for an hour and figure out their lives a little bit.
Yeah.
So give Soto back? Come on. There's stupid people and there's smart people on both sides. It's just we're never gonna get away from it. I literally saw a video the other day of a guy saying he is willing to drive Soto back to the Bronx and give him back to the Yankees, and I literally laughed my ass off. So,
well, I hope that guy loses his driver's license. So we can't do that. I mean, what are we talking about here?
He could pay for Zuber then, maybe.
That guy and those fans that are willing to drive Soto back to the Yankees, you don't deserve to cheer when he hits a home run and wins you a game. I mean, come on.
Yeah, and both fan bases have been obnoxious about it. Obnoxious. It's been ridiculous. I mean, I was really hoping that the Met fans weren't going to boo, for real, because, like I said, if this was August and he's hitting 236 with 10 homers and 50 RBIs, I'd say boo the hell out of him. Boo the hell out of him.
I mean, that's not fair.
It's not August. It's not August yet. But I can understand it if we're talking about 5 months into a season and he's underperforming. I could get it because now the frustration is kind of setting in. It's April, everybody. We've played game 24.
Right. Listen, here's another thing, and this is the same energy that this would be to an extent. So I made the joke in the last episode that I gaff a lot, and we have to sometimes stop and re-record things. And, you know, it's not always as clean as, you know, maybe it seems. You know, there's a lot of outtakes. There's a lot of this. Let me ask you this. When I make a mistake, do you boo me on – Like, no. Is that what happens? Like, that's the energy that it sounds like. That's what it feels like. And listen, you have your mess ups too. You have your little screw ups that I'm not going to do. I'll let you bring that out. I'm not booing you for it. You know what I'm saying?
Like, what are we if that was the case, would we be doing this? Could you imagine if I was like, hey, Mike, cut, you suck, man. This is just terrible. This was terrible. This was a terrible idea. Like,
put the microphone down. Like, what are we saying?
I could do this myself. I could do this.
Right. That's always my favorite. The fans in the stands. That could be better than the guys that do it professionally. That is incredible. Listen, talk about baseball. Like, I'll never sit here and act like I could do what they do. Like,
stop. But forget about the fans for a second. We have guys that are getting paid to do this professionally, talk about sports, and like Sal Licata was one of them, and BT too. He's guilty as well, saying he was too. They said he was 2 weeks away of being able to get booed.
How did you? 2 weeks away. Aaron Judge hit 190 up until what point last season?
Thank you. This the first week of May is when he started to come around.
Sorry, what did Aaron Judge do? How did he finish the season?
He won MVP.
Didn't he win an MVP? He won an MVP, correct? If I'm not mistaken, I'm pretty sure.
With Soto in the lineup.
I'm pretty sure Lindor was probably worse than what Judge was. I think he was hitting like 174 in the middle of May. What did Lindor? How did he? Oh, right. He took second in MVP in the National League. And the only reason why he didn't win it is because that unicorn, Shohei Ohtani, is in the National League now. I mean, what are we saying? 2 weeks away from being booed?
Literally. And that's why I was getting nervous that fans were going to maybe buy into it and say,
they went the other way with that. I'm so glad. I saw Sal Licata today, and guess what he wasn't doing? Yelling. He was cool, calm, collect. Wow, the Met fans are doing. Yeah, exactly, because they proved you wrong.
And then he has the audacity to say that it's the younger fan base that is smoothing this over with Soto. What does that have to do with the age group? I was confused by that.
Excuse. It's always some nonsense.
He's like, maybe it's the younger fans that are kind of trying to go a different way. What different way?
So how about this? Can we go to the studio when he makes a bogus take? Can we boo him on air?
We're basically saying that we've gotten used to booing these guys. That's what he's saying.
It's a joke. I'm sorry. I just listen. I'm all about the tough love stuff, and like I get that. That's fine. I do understand and appreciate and respect that. But that's what coaches are for. We're fans. We want our team to win. You're rooting for your team to win. So you boo a guy in the second inning, and then guess what? He hits a home run to win it at the end of the game. He walks you off in the ninth inning, and now everybody's cheering and they're happy. It doesn't work like that. At least in my opinion, it just doesn't. It frustrates me. Some Yankee fans in the World Series booed Aaron Judge. That pissed me off to my core. Listen, a part of me laughed a little bit. The Yankee-on-Yankee crime thing in the World Series. This is Aaron Judge we're talking about, and you have the nerve to boo him. I thought that was ridiculous. It's Aaron Judge. He's struggling right now. You don't boo this guy. I'm sorry. I don't agree with that. I just don't.
Yeah, I don't agree with it either. I'll never do it. I get more frustrated than angry at the person. I get frustrated saying, oh, we got to do better. I never say out loud at the game, let's boo this guy. That's just crazy. That's crazy talk.
I can't do that. It's not my nature. I think it's ridiculous. But
as far as everything else, like when it comes to Clay Holmes, I pray that he could keep the consistency up. That's basically his problem with the Yankees. Was consistency.
Yeah.
That was his biggest thing. If he could stay consistent, congratulations. You got a nice little steal.
Yeah, I think that's going to be a gem, honestly. As long as it works out, obviously, listen, he's going to have his bad starts, and I'm not going to bury him when he does, but I like what I see so far from him.
He's keeping you in ball games. That's all you could ask for.
Yeah, and he's been a little battle-tested. He's fought back in counts. He's come back and struck out the side when he shouldn't have, and he looks good. And like I said, the battle tested thing for me is huge because it's easy when you're cruising, but what about when you face some adversity? And he's faced a little bit. He's walked a couple of guys, given up a couple of consecutive hits. Errors have happened and he's stayed pretty much collected. And he's, you know, staying, like you said, he's keeping the Mets in games.
He's pitched against a couple of bad teams. He pitched against Miami twice and Minnesota's not too great, but those are games that you want to see him kind of do good in because they're not as great. So
Yeah, you know, and I know Minnesota's not playing well. I know I'm not going to run away from this. I did pick them to win that division, and I'm still standing pat on that. I know Detroit looks phenomenal right now, and that's a little crazy.
And I picked Detroit, so that's a hill you're going to have to die on by yourself, buddy.
And that's all fine. I guess by logic now you should start booing me because it's a bad take, yeah. I guess. But yeah, give me the thumbs down. That's fine. Boom me out of the building for him. But you know what? Listen, about Minnesota, their talent on that roster, they've got hitters in there, and it's like any given Sunday, any given day, that lineup could go crazy. And you know, it's up to you to not allow that to happen. Listen, as we're gonna get into maybe the thicker part of the schedule, and we're gonna see some better teams, we're gonna see exactly what goes on. And even when Houston, I know they didn't really start off all that great. They looked pretty solid against us. Clay Holmes obviously opened that series, pitched against Framber Valdez. You know, again, that's another lineup that any given day could just light the world on fire, and he kept them at bay. I know a lot of other pitchers did because their lineup started off a little slow, but
yeah,
you know, I'm not upset with what I'm seeing. I'm very happy, and I love to throw a shot back because you know some things have been getting annoying, so I had to do that. To you, I'm sorry, not sorry, because you've laughed at me.
Oh, that's okay.
You and I have fun with this.
You could take all the shots you want until you guys win a World Series. You could take shot after shot. Go ahead, shoot me. And then when we do,
maybe not from you, but
no, you know what I'll do? I'll stand up and clap and be like, "God damn it! Thank God it's about time." Welcome to the party.
Cool. I'll be happy to join. I'm waiting in line for a while. It's getting cold. You know, maybe a little hot sometimes too. I want to get in the building. I want to enjoy it.
Win a division for Christ's sake! Come on, win a division. Let's go. We'll get there. We look good right now.
I'm happy.
Six division wins in 66 years. Come on, man. It's got to be better. Got to be better than that.
Tides are turning. I will say that. But hey, guys, in the comments section, I'm sure you didn't like what I had to say. Well, at least the Yankee fans didn't.
Mike's backup account, by the way, everybody, is Mikey Optimism. You can find him on Twitter and Instagram. He's so he could teach you. Listen, if you're on the edge and you don't know how you're going to get through the next couple of days, weeks, months, you follow Mikey Optimism, and he'll get you through it. He'll just get you through it. He's learned from the best. I think he's had maybe one-on-one conversations with Jeremy Hefner. I'm not too sure, maybe bottom my back, but he's very optimistic. He's very optimistic.
Well, shout out to you for giving some random guy on Instagram a bunch of new followers. So shout out to that.
I have to look this up now. If there's a guy Mikey Optimism, I'm going to be really upset, to be honest.
Honestly, I made that up off the cuff.
And I'm going to be very mad if this is a real guy. And I'm going to have to talk to this guy and be like, listen, you got to give up the handle or else.
Listen, if he is real, if that account is real, I want every single one of you listening.
I'll pay the guy for the handle.
Please go follow the account. Listen, I'll say this just so you guys get a perspective of where I'm at in my head. And that's very hard to do because I'm a wild one up here. But I will say this. You know, everyone always says the glass half empty, half full. No. The glass is refillable. That's at least how I view things. I don't think half empty, half full. I think neither. It's refillable. You could always put more in the glass. That's at least where I come from, to give you guys some sense of a perspective and a method to the madness that goes on upstairs with me. But I want to hear the madness that goes on in your heads. So let us know in the comment section of the podcast itself or Diamond Discussions 25 on Instagram and Twitter. Don't give your reactions to Mikey Optimism on Instagram. He is not a part of this show. He's not going to have any idea what's going on in that aspect. So don't do that. Or you can, at least, you know, if you give him a couple of followers, he know where it came from. So again, if that account exists, shout out to him. You know, but a couple more baseball things before we get out of here. We've had some crazy news coming out of Atlanta, and you know, a couple things. I'll start off with maybe the lighter side of it. It comes out that Spencer Strider is heading to the IL again. He's having some hamstring issues. Look, again, like I say, as always, my biggest rival, whatever it is, I don't wish injury on anybody. And this is a guy, he's a premier talent in baseball. You don't want to see it. When it comes to the Mets beating the Braves, I want to beat their best. You know, so it's unfortunate to see that happen.
Who's more injury riddled than Atlanta? I mean, I don't know.
Maybe like the 2008 Mets. I don't know.
It's been unbelievable the last year and a half what they've had to deal with. I mean, even in the World Series year that they won the World Series, they're always got their back against the wall. It's just unbelievable how they can't keep everybody on the field together. But that could only benefit you guys, obviously, in the long run.
Yeah, unfortunately, in that way. I don't like to win that way. Like I said, I want to beat the
Bears. I get it.
That is unfortunate in that issue. But another interesting thing that is coming out from a guy that is currently on the IL, Ronald Acuna had some choice words, I guess, directed at his manager, Brian Snicker, because over the weekend, Jared Kelnick had hit what he thought was a home run and went into home run trot. And then as he was approaching first base, come to realize that ball did not leave the yard. So then tried to stretch it into a double, got thrown out at second base. And essentially no harm, no foul. He remained in the game, which I was shocked to see. And then Acuna had tweeted out, which then therefore not long after decided to delete the tweet. But listen, guys, this is the internet. Once it's there, it's not going anywhere. That's true. He said, if that were me, I would have been taken out of the game. Now, to give you guys some backstory, that is exactly 100% true. Because in 2019, Acuna did something very similar. He didn't get thrown out at second. He just didn't make it to second, ended up with a single. And he got taken out of that game. So my whole thing with this is, and I'll give you my brief perspective on this, and I'll shoot it over to you. Look. There's always those situations where you're right, but you make yourself wrong. And I think that's exactly what Acuna did here. I think he is 100% right. But that is a situation where you could actually bust into his office and we're going to have a conversation. Stop running to the internet. It's so annoying. Like, what are you doing? And I get why he's upset. I absolutely get why he's upset. Now, I don't agree with him going to Twitter about it. I'm not into all that. You got something to say? Say it to me.
I'm with you 100%.
And you have full right to, like I said, maybe not bust the door open type, but pretty close to that. You know, I'm not saying take the door off the hinges, but you have a gripe. You absolutely, he's 1,000% has a gripe with that. Because let's be honest here. What is Jared Kelnick doing pimping a home run? What are you getting into home run trot for? You hit like four a season and you bat under a 200 for how long? So what are you doing, bro? Hit Mets, the ball and
Mets,
run.
Mets legend, Jared.
Yeah, thanks for Edwin Diaz. But
That's true.
What are you doing?
Here's my thing. Acuna needs to worry about him getting on the field and being healthy. That's number one. Number two, like you said, has a 1,000% gripe. He got taken out for a similar play. Yes, he didn't actually round first to get to second and didn't get thrown out and was completely embarrassed like Kelenic was. But Kelenic, the whole thing with him was that he literally got thrown out at second and made himself look completely ridiculous because he pimped a home run. Not only was it not a home run, but you couldn't even get the double. So you made yourself look twice as worse. My thing is that Acuna, he needs to be a leader and he needs to kind of back these guys and maybe talk to them and kind of coach them through things that they're going through and things that they're doing wrong and show that he's a true leader on that team. And I thought that was kind of a knife in the back towards Kelnick and a little bit of a knife in the back towards his manager. I get his manager. It looks a little fishy that he didn't do what he did to Acuna and he supposedly had a quote-unquote talk with Kelnick. To me, it should have been immediately you get taken out. This
Did
team
you
has been
the other thing that he tried to say.
Who's that, Kelnick?
No, the manager. He tried to say that I didn't.
Well, what was I supposed to do? Yeah.
What was I supposed to do? And then he said that he didn't see it. What do you mean you didn't see it?
What do you mean you didn't see?
He didn't see the play happen.
Was he in the bathroom?
I don't know where he was, but that now you so okay.
He didn't see it.
So you didn't see it. You didn't know about it. Supposedly, apparently, till the next day he was coming to the dugout for the next. That's when he supposedly found out. Something along those lines. And
wow, I didn't see that. That's absurd if that's the case.
So I'm sorry, but you and I, let's say just for the sake of the argument, you're the manager, I'm a coach. You supposedly didn't see that go down. I'm doing a disservice, whether I'm your bench coach, your pitching coach, whoever, whatever coach, that I see that happen. And my first reaction is I'm annoyed at you. And now I'm looking at you. I'm looking at you, the manager. I'm looking to see where you're at. If steam is coming out of your ears. I don't know. If I see you down tying your shoe or something, you're not paying attention. Maybe you were getting a drink. Like you said, maybe he was in the bathroom. Who knows? But I turn around and see that you have no idea what's happening. What, am I not going to walk over to you and have a conversation? Hey, did you not just see what just went down? No, let me enlighten you a little bit.
And if you really didn't see what went down, how do you not go watch the replay at least?
That made no sense to me.
And then you go make your comments to the media. You can't tell the media I didn't see that until the next day. What the hell are you talking about?
Yeah, it was something along those lines.
You're managing the game. You're managing the team in the game. You weren't there? Like, what?
Listen, what do you anything, mean? Anything could have been happening in the dugout for him to maybe missed it. That's somewhat understandable. You didn't hear the roar of the crowd. You didn't hear nothing. You didn't hear the crowd probably go crazy when this guy got thrown out of second base. None of that happened. None of that went down.
Your bench coach didn't say, hey, Brian, real quick, Kalnick just hit a double off the wall. He thought it was a home run. He tried to pimp walk it. It backfired, and he got thrown out at second. That was never a conversation that was had?
Yeah, that never happened. You were like, made aware
of it. I'm just a little confused about how you weren't saying that you were there for it. But, hey, listen, to each his own.
Listen,
go ahead.
Have fun with that, guys, down there. Look, I love to see Atlanta squirm and struggle right now and all the drama and all the nonsense that's happening there. As a Met fan, love to see it, you know, so it is what it is. I think we've given you our thoughts on it. My only thing is, Acuna, stay off of Twitter with this or don't, you know, keep stirring up some stuff down there. Keep being a distraction. That's all fine and good up here. We'll take it. I didn't know what was happening. I didn't say that. That's crazy to me.
Yeah, that's and the fact that you're starting off the way you're starting, it's been a rough.
They are getting hot though. They're starting.
They're playing a lot better, but they're still 5 or 6 games under 500, so they have a little bit of a climb. You can't make comments like that when you're struggling like this, and one of your players kind of drops the ball a little bit. And you said you had a quote-unquote talk with him, but you're also admitting you didn't see the play live? I mean, you got to do better than that. That's unacceptable. I'm sorry. On any level. On any level, that's unacceptable.
Right. So, again, guys, we want you to take to our Twitter and our Instagram and our comment section of the podcast and let us know what you think about that whole Ronald Acuna thing. Is he right? Is he wrong? Are you kind of like where we're at, indifferent? Don't care because it's Atlanta. That's also an option. Whatever it is, we want to hear from it. Like I said, I love the madness to hear that's going on in your heads because we give you ours every episode, and I think it's interesting to say the least. Just think about the stuff that we don't say.
Right, exactly.
So I think we're going to lead into the thing that you guys all wait for, or maybe not, whatever, we'll find out. This one came across me on Instagram, and I sent it to you, and you and I talking with a couple of our friends, and I said, yo, you need to go check your Instagram right now, because I think we found our next question. And you were like, yeah, I love it. So this has to be done. As you guys know, Shohei Ohtani is obviously a pitcher, and with that, he hits home runs. So he's clear-cut active leader in home runs for a starting pitcher. Now pitchers haven't hit in a couple of years, so you know this might mess you up a little bit, but I don't want to know who's number one because that's too easy.
Yeah, that's too easy. I mean,
who has the second most home runs by an active pitcher?
That's our question for this week.
I think that's pretty interesting. I'll tell you the truth, I wouldn't have gotten this.
No, neither did I. I
wouldn't have gotten this.
I rattled off a couple of names and I did not, but then I saw it actually when I'm not trying to give anything away, but when I saw who it was, it I remembered it. I remembered immediately who he did it for because there was a couple of weeks where he was going off in his starts. So that's all I'll say. I didn't give away too much, but I needed the refresher to remind myself that yes, I remember the little streak that this guy went on as a pitcher. So, yes.
And guys, I will do the favor of, so you don't have to rewind the 30 seconds or whatever it is in case you missed it. Somehow you didn't. I don't know. But just, you know, so you don't have to do all that. Outside of Shohei Ohtani, we all know he's number one in home runs by a starting pitcher actively. Who is second to Shohei Ohtani as an active pitcher with home runs? And remember, Pitchers haven't hit in a couple of years.
Right. So it's been a while. It's been 2 years since that's happened. So
I will leave you guys with that. I'll let that swirl around. I'm going to look forward to some of your answers because I'm sure they're going to be hilarious. Shout out to whoever says Bartolo Colon because that's going to be great. So shout out to you, whoever you might be. when in doubt, Bartolo Colon.
Exactly.
Guys, listen, as always, we love doing this. We love your feedback. We love hearing from you. We love the fact that we see the views go up every episode. We do appreciate it. We love the love that we're getting from you guys, and we're trying to give it back. So I will stress to you again, in the comments section of the podcast, that's where we want your answers to be. Okay. But outside of that, I can't thank you guys enough for listening. And like always, thanks for hanging out.